It's an absolute pleasure to welcome, for the first time, onto the Business Bunker show, Mr. Stephen Askew. Stephen, welcome to the Business Bunker.
And thank you very much. I'm not sure I'm going to bring decorum, but let's have some fun.
Yeah. First time for everything, bit of decorum. Stephen is a partner in Haynes Watts Chartered Accountants. He's also the representative for the Federation of Small Business East Kent Region. And we're going to be talking about exit strategies and things like that in a moment. But if you wouldn't mind, Stephen, I'd just like a bit of background to you, what you do, how you do it, and who Haynes Watts are.
Right, how did I get here?
Yeah.
That's my father's fault. He felt laying drains was a bit of a waste for a grammar school education. So at the age of 18, I joined an accountancy practice, an international practice in London, and qualified as a chartered accountant. Knowing that London wasn't where I wanted to be, we looked for opportunities outside, and along came a retiring accountant on the Kent coast, and at the age of 29, I took over the firm.
Wow.
And ran it for 30 years until it was time to look to the future. Like most professions, life's getting more complex. Our clients' needs are getting more complex.
Oh, without doubt.
And I looked for a larger umbrella to work with. And accountants is one of those things that if you put yourself on the market, you're going to have lots of suitors. And I did. But why Haynes Watts? I liked Haynes Watts culture. I liked the client service side of it. I liked the fact in Kent we were allowed to dictate our own pricing structures and the way we deal with our clients. We weren't being dictated to by a head office about how we did those important things about looking after clients. And yet nationally, 66 offices, 70 million turnover. I've got every specialist at the end of a phone than I could ever want.
Absolutely. It's one of the things I do like about it is you've got the best of both worlds here.
Absolutely.
And this is really clever. You've got all the structure that goes behind it of a large firm, but you've got none of the drawbacks of large firms, which are they normally ignore their customers. Because each branch, for want of a better word, of Haynes Watts is like a small standalone accountancy on its own, but backed by all of this stuff behind it. And that's one of the lovely things that I like about that organisation.
And more clients, especially in Kent, are dealing internationally.
Yep.
And we have an international network. If you want to know what the tax laws are in a small province in northern China, within a few hours I can let you know.
Right.
And that's a great advantage, especially for somebody who's looking maybe not to learn new skills now at the stage I am. I'm leaving that to the youngsters.
Richard Marshall, the tax guy in Maidstone, probably knows that off the top of his head anyway, doesn't he?
Yeah. He knows an awful lot.
Yeah, it's Zaipong District taxes. I mean, he's bound to know that without even blinking. So that's cool. And I know we're going to go on and talk about something else, but it's interesting because you, to some extent, have actually been through a similar type of process to that which we're going to talk about, which is, one, acquiring a firm, and then, two, kind of divesting a firm.
Absolutely. I've been at both ends, and we're very much in the structure of succession and looking at the partner's own exit strategies over the next few years. It's not going to happen over the next 1 or 2 years, but we're already planning for what will be happening in 5 to 10 years' time.
And this is the crucial thing, is it not, when you're thinking about businesses and that kind of thing, that there's a plan in place or, a general direction of travel at the very least, i.e. you've got to know what you're trying to do.
Oh, absolutely. You've got to have a good reason why. And you've got to know where you're going. Mm. And you do have to think about it a long way. Yeah. But planning is the big word. You know, I don't do much compliance work. If you want me to do a set of accounts, please don't ask me. I've got some great people that do that for me. If you want me to do a tax return, don't ask me. I've got great people that do that for me. If you want me to help a business develop or an exit strategy, then you'll end up talking to me. And we're always talking about planning, but never more is succession dependent on a strong business plan. It is the foundation for long-term succession or exit strategy.
Absolutely. It's interesting, isn't it? I work at the other end of the market as an angel investor, primarily with startup businesses. But I have exactly the same problem there, because when I come along and start talking to people about taking an equity investment in their business, my first question is, what's your exit strategy? And they always look at me astounded and they go, exit? We haven't even started the business yet. And I go, but you want me to invest. There's got to be a reason that I'm investing, and that reason is to make some money. And the one of the only ways I'm going to do that is if we exit the business and sell it to someone. Otherwise, I'm not going to get my money back. So, and I would say probably 90% of people are shocked by the fact that before they've started a business, they need an exit plan.
Absolutely. Mm. In fact, most people that start businesses have always got it in mind that they will sell it one day, unless they're going to build it to pass it on to members of the family. But that in itself is a form of sale.
I was going to say, but that's still an exit plan, isn't it?
It absolutely is.
You know, you don't have to sell the business. You can pass it on in another way, but it's still an exit for you.
Yeah, and if it's not family, it's we see a lot of management buyouts.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Yeah.
And it's still a succession, it's still an exit strategy, it still has to be planned for over many years.
Absolutely. So I want to kind of explore this, if I may, a little bit, in terms of when faced with a business, presumably a reasonably successful business, otherwise, some businesses have to exit and sell for other kinds of reasons, like, you know, they're going down the pan. So let's leave that aside for 1 minute. We might come back to that in a moment. But a reasonably successful business, someone thinking about retirement or exiting a business because it's now's the time to do it, or soon will be. What's the kind of starting point with something like that? I'm keen to hear two things, really, here. How most people go about it, i.e. so the reality, what normally happens when someone walks into your office and goes, hello, Stephen, I'm thinking of selling, or what do I do? Not even thinking of selling, what do I do? So I want to hear the reality of that. And then I want to explore what we should be doing, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, it's because every case is different.
Yeah.
And when people come and see me, probably the first hour, 2 hours, is just me listening and asking the odd question. Mm. Just to see what people's culture is and what they want out of it. Mm. One of the first things I may have to do is give realistic expectations. People are looking at high values for businesses, but not all businesses attract high values. So we have to look very professionally at what we can reasonably expect to achieve from the sale of a business. The other thing is letting go. Mm. And most business owners, especially those that were the original startup, have real problems letting go. Mm. And you can't sell yourself. You have to sell a business. Mm. And sadly, an awful lot of people come to us and they think they've got a business, but they don't. What they'll actually do is working for themselves.
Yeah.
And that you can't really sell unless you're going to go and work for somebody for a while.
Yeah.
But to have a true business, it must be able to carry on without you.
Absolutely.
Now, that may not be today, but you may have 3 or 4 or 5 years to engineer that business so it will work without you. You've got to become dispensable. And so when we're looking and talking to especially new clients or people that we don't act as accountants for but come and see me with this very specialized advice, is where are they in that process? Where do they see themselves? Are they the one person around which the business runs? Or are they sitting to the side and supporting the business and encouraging other people to do that work?
Yep.
And you have to look at who you've got in the business, who else is in the business, and who could continue that, and whether the relationships in the business are transferable.
Absolutely. I want to come back to something you said right up front about people's expectations of sales, because I personally came across this some time ago, and it was actually very sad, really, and disappointing for them. I was approached 18 months, 2 years ago by a reasonably successful small business that wanted an exit sale. The people that owned it were looking to retire. They were well past retirement age already. And they had a reasonably successful little business. And they came to me and said, would you like to buy it? And I had a look at the business and I thought, actually, that's not a bad little business. And I said, yeah. And I'd kind of be looking at this kind of price. And they fell about laughing and they went, you're joking. We want, you know, millions. It wasn't actually millions, but do you know what? They wanted an order of magnitude far and above what I offered them. And I said, in all honesty, I have to tell you, your business is not worth that. You know, and this is where I want to ask you some questions here, Stephen. Really horrible questions that I know you can't answer because there is no answer. But back at that time, we were looking at service business sales on a multiple of 6 times earnings, roughly.
Yeah.
So I just use that as a rule of thumb, you know, what's their revenues, 6 times that, that's what I'll offer you. And they went, you're joking, da, 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 da. So I pulled out of the deal, it wasn't, I happened to find out that they actually sold the business eventually about 2 months ago for a quarter of what I offered them initially. Because they got so desperate, they just took an offer eventually. And that's sad. Because they've taken their eye off the ball as well, and they were so determined to retire, they weren't building a business or developing it, so it was running downhill. So that's a bit of a long-winded way of asking you these days, looking at service businesses, you know, what's the starting point? If you're trying to value, if you're trying to get some kind of idea of what your business might be worth, where do you start?
With the buyer.
Yeah. Yeah.
In truth, you know, and forgive me for, you know, reciting something that I do say. It sounds probably accountancy, but the value of a business is the net present value of the future cash flows the buyer will receive from that business. Mm. So the value of a business is got more about the future than the past. Mm. Now, I know a lot of people will value businesses based on the last 3 years' accounts and average earnings and all these EBITDAs which people throw around and all this jargon. Mm. But actually, it's about what's going to happen in the future. Mm-hmm. So we have to look forward. Yes, the past is an indicator of the future. But just the fact it will be changing hands will change the future. And that's why the value of a business can vary totally by who's buying it. Mm. Because if the firm that are buying it, the business that's buying it, is going to get great savings because they're in the same industry, they're going to be closing down units, they're going to be restructuring.
Or taking out competition, in fact.
Or taking out competition. But that business can generate a lot more cash by buying the business for sale than somebody coming in from the outside and saying, I fancy doing that, I think I'll buy that business. Mm. So quite often the best buyers you can get are your competitors.
Yeah, trade sale.
Yeah, absolutely, because they will be prepared to pay more because they will generate more cash, especially in the first, say, 3 years.
And as you identify, there's more value to them in the business from other points of view other than just the cash flow and revenues, turnovers and profit.
Yeah, I've got a valuation going on at the moment, and it's been an incredibly profitable business over the last 5 years. Mm. But they've just lost 70% of their customer base.
Wow.
So the future...
That was unfortunate.
That was very unfortunate. It's
probably down the back of the sofa. They look down there.
You know, so actually, what's that business worth? I would say the business is worth what it's got in the bank.
Right, okay.
Because there's not enough ongoing orders to generate a profit other than that will cover the owner's salaries. And that's the other thing that a lot of people don't take into consideration, especially with us accountants doing our tax planning and extracting profits by anything other than a salary. People forget to adjust the profits for the real cost of running a business. Mm. And so sometimes, you know, people look at their profits and say, oh, we want 5 times that. Yeah, but that's actually not the right profit figure that we have to start with.
Sure, yeah. I mean, a lot of this depends on the balance sheet, and there's all kinds of things that you're looking at. With a privately owned business, there's all kinds of things that, you know, can be added back in, taken out, taken into account. You know, if the owner of the business has been buying themselves a new Ferrari every year and stuff like that on the company, you can see that in the books and go, well, hold on a minute, we might not do that. One of the things that I'm also interested in, because when I talk to people about such things, they don't always understand this, especially with a service business, is an earn-out.
Yeah.
Maybe you could touch on that, Stephen.
Well, these are becoming far more popular now. Yeah. For many reasons. Yes, we can go to the banks and the difficulty in raising finance in certain areas, and some changes in tax laws which have stopped us using company assets to secure loans. So a lot of people want to sell their businesses, people want to buy those businesses, but they don't have the money. And so what they do is come to an agreement that they will pay the value of the business over 5 years, maybe even as long as 10 years, but normally it's 3 to 5 years.
Yep.
And then the new owners can finance the purchase of the business from the profits of that business. Mm. Of course, we do have problems sometimes because the profits don't always cover the repayments, and the new owners aren't always realistic about what they can personally take out of the business and what they have to leave in the business for the previous owner. There are lots of protections that we put in for the sellers, making sure that if the money does dry up, that they can take action, that they can look. But even, in fact, I've got one case where they've sold the same company 3 times on an earn-out because each earn-out failed, so they took the business back,
right.
And now it's been broken down and there's been an asset sale.
Right, okay.
So before you go into an earn-out, you have to be very confident, plus you have to protect yourself.
Absolutely. Cool. And just for completeness, how does that compare to a management buyout?
Most management buyouts are earn-outs.
Yeah.
Most management buyouts we see are earn-outs. It is very rare that we see that the managers in a business, people that have been employed all their lives, unless they've come into an inheritance or they want to refinance their house, that they'll have anywhere near the sum that they need to buy out. So normally most of the acquisition is an earn-out.
Okay, cool. Martin's going to dive in there.
Yeah, I just wanted to touch on something you said earlier, Paul, about you know, that one of the first questions you ask of someone that wants to sell their business, you know, what's your exit strategy, you know, if they want you to invest in a business. And for me, it's so fundamental to think about how you're going to balance what you want to achieve in business with what you want to achieve in your personal life.
Yep.
Because ultimately, if you own a business, the two are totally 100% interlinked.
Absolutely.
And the whole reason you own a business is because ultimately you want to have more control over your ability to ultimately create a life that you want outside of that business.
Absolutely.
So to not have an exit strategy in place on day one means you haven't really thought about what you want your life to look like in the next 5 or 10 years' time. So for me, the two are intrinsically linked on that
Absolutely.
Level.
Absolutely. And funnily enough, it's actually broader than that as well. As those of us that are getting on in years suddenly start to realise when we have a substantial business, there are all kinds of other impacts as well. You know, this inheritance. If you suddenly get hit by the proverbial bus, there's a whole heap of issues here. If a spouse or children inherit your business, are they capable of running it? Do they want to run it? What's the impact on the staff and management? You know, so you get loads of things now where people starting to look at, well, hold on a minute. This business could go kaput if we lost the major shareholder through illness or accident. You know, what would happen? So there's some protections you can put in place for that. But that's another thing to be considered is that, you know, even if you're not selling the business on the open market, you might exit by passing on to another generation. And so there's so many things to look at.
And I've got a lot of sad stories, which I won't go through today, of exactly that happening. Mm. But you touched on something there, which I was going to come to. We think about business owners and we think about businesses and we think about the customers and the supply chain. Mm. But in terms of succession, what you really have to think about more than anything else are the team.
Yeah.
The people you employ. Mm-hmm. Not only do you have to have the right people in place, you have to have the right level of team engagement. You have to have them engaged in the business. Because the biggest barrier, one of the biggest barriers to selling a business is the business owner that hasn't engaged its team, who hasn't trained a team to be able to run that business. Mm. As I said earlier, you have to be separate. You have to be able to stand away and let the business run without you, especially towards the end of the plan. Mm. So it is actually about investing in your team to give them, because there sometimes are skill gaps we have to fill, we have to identify them, we have to say, do we need to bring somebody in? Can we train somebody to do that? Mm. And we have to allow them to do it, because one of the biggest difficulties that business owners have is delegation.
Oh, absolutely.
And if you don't delegate, you won't empower people, you won't train people, there will be no one to do your job. So if you suddenly, you know, one of the vast skiing trips you do or whatever, you break a leg, you're in hospital, you're not there, have you got a team that can manage your business when you're not there? And if you're going to sell, that's where you start. You start with a team. In fact, it's a rule across almost any business facet. Look at the team.
Absolutely.
Look at the team.
And I want to wrap up with another horrible question, because I like doing this to you, Stephen.
That's okay.
As a rule of thumb, and I know it's going to be a rule of thumb, how far out do you think is appropriate to start thinking about? I mean, you should think about it all the time, but if you suddenly want to be serious about exiting your business, what's a good period of time to be planning this?
I normally say 5 years.
Right.
And although I've said that it's about future cash flows, it's not about always about the past accounts, we're quite often negotiating with other parties that are totally reliant on the past accounts, and they don't necessarily understand what the rest of us do. So when you're grooming a business for sale, we're not buying any new Ferraris. So we're not having to suffer that amortization. So we're grooming the business to look as it would do with a new owner. Without those things going on in that a lot of companies do. So you may wish not to invest so heavily. Which seems counterintuitive. But if you invest heavily, then there's a lot more in terms of depreciation, so it's hitting the profit, but it's also increasing the value of the business, making it more difficult to find a buyer. We also have to look at things like properties. Should the property be in the company that's for sale, or should it be taken out? Generally, we'll probably take it out, but it depends on the property and the type of business it is. The one thing that I've learned over 40-odd years is there are no rules. Every, you know, and an old friend of mine used to say that a prescription without diagnosis is malpractice. So every case has to be different. We have to ask the right questions. And if I think I do anything, it's ask the right questions. And the answers quite often just fall out of the answers of there. So,
good stuff. Stephen, thank you so much for that. A really fascinating look at exit strategies and really useful and important information.
It's been a great pleasure.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for coming in. Stephen Watts, partner at Haynes Watts. Thank you so much for joining us on the Business Bunker.
Thank you.